Cause you're a sky, cause you're a sky full of stars. Welcome to the AAA's podcast for August. We are now far enough past the longest day for truly dark nights to be with us once more. The hours of daylight are decreasing. On August the 1st, the sun will rise at about 5:20 a.m. British Summer Time and will set at about 8:40 p.m, giving a day length of approximately 15 hours. But by the end of the month, the sun will be rising at about 6:20 a.m. and setting about 7:40 p.m, giving a day length of roughly 14 hours. The moon will be full on August the 7th and will be at last quarter on August the 15th. It will be new on August the 21st and will be at first quarter on August the 29th. I enjoy following the phases of the moon, even though its brightness sometimes interferes with observations of fainter objects. Learning the main features of the moon adds to this enjoyment, so I will include some information about what can be seen through a telescope or binoculars in these podcasts. This month, I will say something about the moon's seas. One of the most obvious features of the moon, and something that can be seen with the naked eye, is that some parts of the moon are light-coloured and some are dark. It used to be thought that the moon had seas like Earth, indicated by the areas of dark coloration. It is now known that the dark areas are not seas, but the name has stuck, and the dark areas are known as maria, which is Latin for seas. A simplified version of how the marias came into being is as follows. In its early life, the moon was a mixture of types of molten rock. As it cooled, the less massive rock floated to the surface. As it happened, this rock was lighter, both in mass and in colour. A stage was reached when the outer surface formed a solidified crust of light-coloured rock, under which darker rock was still molten. At the time this was happening, a stage was reached in the development of the local part of the solar system, which became known as the late heavy bombardment. Between about 4 and 3.8 billion years ago, large asteroid-like bodies hit the moon. Some had enough energy to dent the crust-forming basins. Over time, the centre part of the basins filled with a darker coloured molten rock from deeper in the moon and formed the maria we see today. A good time to start exploring the moon is during its first quarter, when the sun illuminates the surface at an oblique angle so that features on the surface throw shadows and thus are more easily seen than when the sun is higher in the lunar sky. The maria, seen at first quarter, resemble a lobster's claw formed from four parts. The most northerly part is a circular sea, the Sea of Serenity, or Mare Serenitatis if you want to go Latin. Below this is a similar-sized sea, the Sea of Tranquility, Mare Tranquillitatis, forever famous for being the site of the first manned moon landing. Protruding from the lower right-hand corner of Tranquility is an elongated sea forming the lobster's upper pincer, the Sea of Plenty, Mare Fecunditatis. A small round sea, the Sea of Nectar, Mare Nectaris, forms the opposing pincer. A fifth sea, not forming part of the lobster claw, lies between the Sea of Tranquility and the eastern limb of the moon. This is a sea of crisis, Mare Crisium. You may have noticed that three of the sea's names are associated with human emotions: serenity, tranquility, and crisis. The moon has long been associated with emotions. Many people believe that disturbed people become more disturbed at full moon, although no one has produced convincing evidence to support this notion. Have a look at the moon and see if you can locate and identify the seas I have described. Moving on to the planets, Jupiter is still on view, low in the southwest. At the beginning of the month, the time between the sky being dark enough to see Jupiter and Jupiter setting is short. By the end of the month, Jupiter will be too close to the sun to observe. Saturn is well placed in the constellation of Ophiuchus. It can be seen in the south as darkness falls. Although only about 20 degrees high, with its rings open, it is a stunning sight. We observed it at our last AAA meeting through our 4-inch refractor, and it yielded a very stable image despite Saturn's low altitude. Neptune is on view in the south and reaches opposition in September. It is in the constellation of Aquarius and will be visible through a good pair of binoculars or a small telescope. Uranus is visible by 2 a.m. British summer time and will be rising progressively earlier as the month progresses. A small telescope will show its small blue-green disk. The Perseid meteor shower. The Perseids are a favourite shower as, at maximum, they can produce a rich display of bright trails and at a time of year when the temperature is warm enough not to cause discomfort. The Perseids can be spotted between July the 23rd and August the 20th, but are scarce except the peak, which occurs on the night of August the 12th, going into the early hours of the 13th. At the peak, as many as 30 meteors per hour might be seen from a reasonably dark, moonless site in Suffolk. As I mentioned earlier, however, the moon can sometimes be a nuisance when trying to observe faint objects. This month's Perseid shower is a case in point, as the moon will be only 5 days past full on the night of the peak of the shower. Although this will interfere with the ability to see the fainter meteors, there are usually enough bright meteors during the peak of the Perseids to make the shower worth observing. This season of the year is a good time to hunt down some planetary nebula. These are small objects, often round in shape, which through a small telescope can resemble planets, hence their name. They have no other connection with planets. In fact, they are dying stars. A star, such as our Sun, burns by converting hydrogen into helium, releasing energy. Eventually, the hydrogen fuel is exhausted and, if circumstances are right, helium begins to burn. This produces carbon and more energy. For low-mass stars, however, there is insufficient pressure for the carbon to begin to burn, and instead, the core of the star will form a white dwarf. This is a very dense object producing radiation, which blows the star's atmosphere into an expanding bubble and causes it to glow. These objects will need a telescope to observe, as being relatively small, they will require some magnification to appreciate. One of the best known of the planetaries is the Ring Nebula, number 57 in Messier's catalogue. This can be found in the constellation of Lyra. To find it, locate Vega, one of the stars forming the summer triangle. Slightly below and to the left of Vega are a pair of stars. Below these are a second pair of stars which look like a slightly brighter version of the first pair. These are Sulafat and Shelyac, classified as Gamma Lyra and Beta Lyra respectively. The Ring Nebula can be found approximately two-thirds of the way from Sulafat to Shelyak. It looks like a smoke ring in the sky. It is sufficiently bright to take a reasonable degree of magnification. The Dumbbell Nebula, Messier 27, is found in Sagittar the Arrow, which I mentioned last month. Locate the arrow in the summer triangle. The brightest star in the arrow is near its tip and is Gamma Sagittar. Locate this star and then move north by about 3 degrees. You should then be in the vicinity of the Dumbbell. When you've seen the Dumbbell through a small telescope, you will know why it got its name. The Owl Nebula, Messier 97, is to be found in Ursa Major. Locate the bowl of the plough. The two stars that form the base of the bowl are Gamma on the left and Beta on the right. The Owl is to be found about 3/4 of the way between Gamma and Beta and slightly below a line drawn between them. The Cat's Eye Nebula is not in Messier's catalogue. Its new general catalogue, NGC number, is 6543. It is to be found in Draco the Dragon. It is a little more of a challenge to find than the previous ones, as it is in a part of the sky with few bright features or clear patterns. To find the Cat's Eye without a go-to telescope, first become familiar with the constellation Draco. This is a long constellation which meanders round the North Circumpolar region. Computer programs like Stellarium or star maps that have lines drawn connecting the stars so as to emphasize stellar patterns are useful here. Locate the stars Delta Draconis and Zeta Draconis. The Cat's Eye is roughly midway between the two. Best of luck with that one. Until next time, clear skies.